Want me to stay with you? Karina tucks a strand of hair back behind my ear. I don't mind. We can watch something on my laptop. Polish off some chocolate. I have a stash in my room. Wearily, I shake my head. If it's all right with you, I'd kinda like to be alone. This is all a lot to wrap my head around. Karina looks unsure, but she accepts my decision with a sorry smile and gives me one last hug. All right. I'm just at the other end of the hall if you need me, okay? Shoot me a text if you change your mind. The moment she's gone, a fissure of lightning rips open the sky outside my bedroom window, bleaching the gardens and the trees outside the academy bone white, throwing tall, menacing shadows across the lawns. Darkness descends a moment later, shrouding everything in black, the rain continuing to hammer against the glass. But in that brief moment of illumination, I see something. A figure cloaked in shadow, standing at the mouth of the hedges that lead to the maze. 10. Elodie. No one said a word about the knife sticking out of my bed. Strikes me a little odd, that fact. I'd have thought it would have been the first thing Principal Harcourt wanted to discuss with me. Surely she should have wanted to reassure me that I was safe and that no one would be allowed to harm me here at Wolf Hall Academy. She seemed far more concerned with replacing my damaged property instead of getting to the bottom of the matter, though. And no one had any ideas or suggestions as to who might have done this to my room or what they were hoping to achieve by trashing my stuff. The military-style training that passed as my childhood wasn't just physical, though. It was mental, too. I was taught how to read and assess a situation on sight from a very young age. I know how to read a room and take it apart piece by piece without touching a single thing. Colonel Stillwater trained me how to draw educated conclusions about a person's intent from their actions. And I've already drawn a number of educated conclusions about the break-in, based on what I observed during the first 5 seconds after I walked into my room. Whoever tore my room apart wasn't trying to threaten me. Or at least, that wasn't their main purpose anyway. The pages ripped out of the books? That was a pointed exercise, as were the drawers that were pulled off their runners and dumped upside down onto the floor. Whoever broke into my room was looking for something. Something concealed inside the jacket of another book or taped to the bottom of a drawer. And the pillows and bed? Same thing. They were searching for something that I don't think they found. It's possible that the knife in the bed wasn't a threat. It's possible that whoever tossed my room got disturbed at some point, either by me or someone else, and they fled, leaving the blade buried up to the hilt by accident. I have no reason to believe it was Ren who did this, but every cell in my body is screaming that it was him. The way he was staring at me during our English class. It looked like he was plotting terrible, evil things, and for some sick reason, I couldn't force myself to stop looking at him. That hour, trapped inside Dr. Fitzpatrick's room, was an embarrassment. I should have had a little more self-control. I should have been able to block Ren out. I've never had an issue ignoring a guy with an attitude problem before. But this guy. He's different. I suspect he's way more than I can handle. And invading my room, breaking every personal possession I own, destroying the only thing I really, truly hold dear. That's so cold and calculating that I'm actually worried I might not be able to manage the attentions of a guy like Ren Jacoby all by myself. I'm too agitated to sleep, so I pace back and forth by the window, turning things over in my head. What the hell does he want from me, for fuck's sake? And what the hell did he want in this room? I know so little about Ren that guessing the answers to these questions is near impossible. So, what do I do about him? What do I do about this troubling fascination I feel coiled like a snake around my insides every time I think his cursed name? How the fuck do I make it through these final months at Wolf Hall without falling foul of some terrible dark act? Because it feels like something terrible and dark is about to happen. Just like the storm clouds amassed in the sky above Wolf Hall. This sense of foreboding presses down on me from above, filling me with dread. From the way Karina reacts anytime Ren, Dashiell, or Pax are close by, my worries seem justified. Dashiell treated her horribly and broke her heart. But something in my gut tells me there's more to that story than she's letting on. I think she's keeping secrets, and I don't begrudge her them. We've only been friends for a little over a week. I can't expect her to trust me and take me into her confidence when neither of us have figured each other out yet. She warned me not to go near the boys or their precious riot house. But shit, if there is something I need to know, something specific that could prevent me from getting seriously, actually hurt, then that would be useful information. The best thing I can do is stay the hell away from Ren and his friends. Avoid contact with them at all costs. And get a fucking lock on my bedroom door, even though they're forbidden, according to the Wolf Hall rulebook. Fire ordinances, or health and safety, or something like that. I dare anyone to challenge me over a little protection for myself and my belongings, now that this has happened, though. By midnight, the storm outside has gotten so bad that the wind howls through the gaps in the windows, and the rain slamming down on top of the eaves above my window sounds like my father's old unit are practicing their drills right on top of me. It's so dark outside that I can barely make out the boughs of the huge live oaks that loom over the maze, tossing and groaning under the elemental assault. I've lived in all kinds of different places, climates, and landscapes. For a time, my mother insisted I stay with her for a year in Chicago when I was a child. But aside from that, all of my other homes have been in warm climates. Deserts and beaches, for the most part, due to my father's dislike of the cold. That he sent me to live in such a bitterly cold spot now really speaks to the fact that he plans on never visiting me here, which is totally fine by me. But this kind of weather feels unnatural to me. I've never experienced anything remotely like it. I've hated thunderstorms since I was a child, but my fear is amplified 1,000-fold tonight, given what took place in my room. Ugh. The clock on my cell phone reads 2:15 a.m. when the storm reaches its climax. Somewhere, a shutter door bangs loudly, crashing every few seconds in the gale-force winds. I try to sleep, but with the normally silent building moaning and sighing so deafeningly, there's absolutely no way I can pass out. Agitated beyond measure, I get out of bed, throwing back the covers, shivering against the cold that seeps through the thin material of my pajamas. I stand in front of the window, baring my teeth at the sheet rain that obscures the view on the other side of the glass, willing it to fucking stop. Which is when I see the light. Not a street light or a bedroom light, a flash of light in the form of a narrow pillar of brilliant white shooting straight up into the air from the very center of the maze. I blink and it's gone. Probably imagined it, Stillwater. No one's out there tonight after 2 a.m. and the pouring rain and cold. There's just no fucking way. No one in their right minds. The pillar of light blazes through the darkness again, this time spearing straight up and then lowering so that it's shining directly at my window. I'm blinded as the intense beam hits me in the face. I step back, shielding my eyes, but the beam of light has already shifted, swinging from left to right through the maze. What the hell? I squint out of the window, trying to see where it's coming from. But with the rain and the impenetrably thick cloud cover tonight, it's impossible to see much more than dim outlines of the world beyond my room. Whatever this is, it's none of my business. I say it out loud, meaning it with every fiber of my being. If someone's dumb enough to brave this madness, then it must be for a good reason. It's probably one of the professors dealing with some kind of weather damage battening down the hatches. Get your ass back in bed, Elodie. Draw the damn curtains and go the fuck to sleep. Now. Sometimes I don't obey my own commands. I do dumb shit even though I tell myself to do the exact opposite. I never disobey myself when I use my father's angry bark as the voice of reason in my head, though. I pull the curtains closed and get back under the covers, determined to get at least a couple of hours sleep before Karina comes knocking on my door tomorrow morning. I can do this. I can switch off my brain and relinquish myself to sleep. I close my eyes. The storm outside rages on, and I breathe into my diaphragm, pushing out my belly, filling myself up with oxygen. Breathing like this is a great calming tactic during a panic attack. I still get those from time to time. But it also has the added benefit of making me sleepy. If I do this for a couple of minutes, the tension in my body will ebb away, and I'll pass out before I'm even aware that I'm about to drift off. There's something hypnotic about the pull and draw of so much air filling and rushing out of my body. It's rare that this trick doesn't work. I clear my mind. Breathe in. Exhale. Pause. Breathe in. Exhale. Pause. I repeat the motion, rinse and repeat, over and over again. But my mind just will not quiet. God damn it. I open my eyes, sighing out a weighty groan. And there, on the far side of my room, projected over the wooden door, is an imperfect rectangle of light. Fuck. I mustn't have pulled the curtains closed properly. Growling, I sit up, about to swing my legs over the side of the bed again, when the light flicks off and disappears. Huh. Okay. It's returned before I can settle back into my pillows. It flicks on and off in rapid succession, like a faulty strip light. It looks random at first, but when I stare at it a little longer, I realize that the strobing light isn't random. It isn't random in the slightest. It's Morse fucking code. The same short burst of Morse code, repeating itself over and over again. I wait for the cycle to pause for a second, indicating the end of the message. And when it starts up again, I do my best to keep up with the flashes. Dot dash dash dot. That's a P. I miss the next part. Whoever's standing in the pissing rain sending covert messages to another student in this building is signaling too fast for me to keep up. I wait, biding my time until the message begins again. P, and then dot dash dash. That's a W. The last letter, dash dot dash dot, is a C. P-W-C? Anyone with half a brain cell and a father in the military knows what PWC stands for. Proceed with caution. Some kind of lover's tryst? An invitation? A warning? It's warm in my bed, as well as considerably drier in here than outside. On any other night, I'd be so curious about the message and what it meant that I wouldn't be able to stop myself. I'd have to sneak out and see what kind of salacious meetings were taking place inside the maze. But tonight, my own self-preservation instincts tell me that I'm much safer right where I am, protected from flying debris, gale force winds, icy rain, and hypothermia. About to try my breathing technique again, my eyelids flutter. And the light starts flashing again with a whole new message. A-R-E. Y-O-U. A-C-O-W-A-R-D. S-T-I-L-L-W-A-T-E-R. ? Are you a coward, Stillwater? The light goes out, and this time it stays out. What the hell? I launch myself out of bed. The rain's so bad, even worse than before, rolling across the window in sheets, that there's no way I can see the maze anymore. All I see is the gauntlet thrown down, the challenge of someone waiting out there in the dark. For me. No, I groan. You have got to be kidding me. Thanks to Colonel Stillwater's rush evacuation from Tel Aviv, I didn't have time to go shopping for new clothes before I was bundled onto that personnel carrier. I have no coat with me, not one that would provide any sort of protection against the gale that's blowing outside. As I step out of the front door, I tighten my light, too thin bomber jacket around me, thankful that at least my feet should stay dry inside my Doc Martens. The rain hits me square in the face, ice cold and shocking, forcing a string of curse words out of my mouth as I duck my head, forging forward, out into the maelstrom. The wind rips my hood down and whips my hair up around my head. I don't have to worry about it flying around my face for too long, though. By the time I've reached the corner of the building, it's soaking wet and plastered to my skull. This is fucking insanity, I hiss, jogging along the perimeter of the school, doing my best to keep my footing as I skid in the bog of mud that was once the border of the Rose Garden. Each second feels like a minute. The distance from the wall outside Dr. Fitzpatrick's room to the entrance of the maze stretches out, increasing with every step I take instead of growing shorter, and I question whether I've lost my goddamn mind. This is not a good idea. This is a horrible idea. No one knows where I've gone. I decoded a fucking Morse code message in the middle of the night, cast onto my bedroom wall, and like a stubborn idiot, I decide to prove I wasn't a coward rather than stay where it was safe and warm. Who fucking does that? Dumb girls in horror movies, my father's voice informs me. The stupid ones who wind up dead with their body parts strewn across the lawn. Didn't ask for your opinion, thanks, Dad, I growl, gritting my teeth as a freezing cold gust of wind pelts droplets of rainwater into my face. At the mouth of the maze, I consider turning back. For a long second, I give myself the opportunity to turn around, to return to the relative protection of my room. Then I remember that knife sticking out of my bed, and I scoff at that idea. My room isn't safe, and I'm already drenched to the bone. My calves are covered in mud, and someone's waiting for me in this maze, likely the person responsible for wrecking my belongings, and I want to face them. I want to face Ren, because I already know it was him who sent the message. If I face him, I can nip this whole thing in the bud. I'll be tackling the situation head on. And isn't that what my father taught me? Never run from the enemy, Elodie. Never show them your back. Any sign of weakness will be your ultimate downfall. The most remarkable generals in history always met force with force. Still, I'm aware how ill-advised this is. I should have left a note, requesting that something pithy and deprecating be engraved on my headstone. She lived recklessly and died the same way. God grant her the wisdom to make better choices in the afterlife. Something about the view of the maze from my bedroom window gave me the creeps. I didn't like looking out at it, but I did force myself to map out a vague route to its center. Left, left, right. Straight, left, right, right. Then the hairpin, then left, then one last right. My teeth chatter, clashing together violently as I try and follow the directions I have committed to memory. The walls of the hedges are high, though, sinister and imposing. It feels like there are arms reaching out at me from within them, hands grabbing for me, pulling at my clothes, trying to yank me into the sharp, dense walls of the labyrinth. It's just rogue branches and twigs catching on my jacket and the thin knee-length cotton of my pajama bottoms, but I can't shake the awful panic rising in me that I won't make it out of this godforsaken obstacle course alive. Soon, I've gotten so turned out that I have no idea which way I'm supposed to be heading. I can feel my father's disappointment radiating all the way from the Middle East. He wouldn't have gotten lost in this nightmare place. He'd have bulldozed his way through the fucking walls, armed and ready to face whatever danger awaited him at its heart. I'm not too worried about having lost my way. I know if I just keep turning in the same direction over and over again, I'll eventually reach its center point. So that's what I do, turning to the left at every intersection or fork in the path, the soles of my boots crunching on the gravel, and I work on calming my nerves. Panic will kill you quicker than anything else. Panic will kill you quicker than anything else. Panic will kill you quicker than anything else. That's what my old surfing instructor used to tell me back when we lived in South Africa. I repeat it over and over like a mantra, driving the words into my brain, making them feel true. I just need to stay calm. Fuck! A rumble of thunder crashes directly overhead, and I nearly jump straight out of my docks. The force of it vibrates inside my body, resounding in the hollow of my chest. Lightning rips across the sky, giant forks of brilliant, piercing light that shoots from left to right. I try not to picture what it would feel like if one of those fearsome fingers of light were to strike down and make contact, using my 17-year-old dumbass as a conduit to the ground. It's enough to know that it would really fucking hurt. I keep on walking, head bent, shoulder constantly into the wind, which doesn't seem right since I change direction every few seconds. But it appears the wind is just as trapped inside this maddening network of pathways as I am. It skirls and eddies around, 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 and no matter how quickly I hurry, I can't get ahead of it. Just when I'm about to give up and look for a place to shelter, another hand reaches out and grabs hold of me, fingers closing tightly around my upper arm. I scream. Jesus, do I scream? I hate that I react so dramatically, but in the moment, it feels so fucking real that I believe it. I know with a terrifying certainty that some unknown specter has emerged from the eye of the storm, taken me by the arm, and is about to drag me down into the darkest pits of hell. I'm not cut out for hell. I'm more of a cotton candy and endless back rubs kind of girl. An eternity of damnation does not sound good. Jesus, Stillwater, quit screaming. You'll wake the fucking dead. Startled, I close my mouth, my teeth making a sharp crack as they snap together. Not an unknown specter, it turns out. I'm familiar with this demon, with his raven black hair and his shockingly green eyes. Even in the rain and the darkness, Ren Jacoby's eyes look too vivid. He smirks, his hair arranged in artful wet curls that flick up around his ears, rivulets of water coursing down his handsome face, and I almost let out another blood-curdling scream. My maternal grandmother told me stories about the devil sometimes. She told me that he was the most beautiful of all the angels, that God gave him a countenance that made women sigh and curdled men's hearts with jealousy. The last time I saw her, at the tender age of 8 years old, she warned me, "Elodie, child, be extra careful of the handsome ones. They'll trick you with their beauty, but it's all a facade. Their eyes may peer into your soul, and their mouths may leave you breathless. But beneath their pleasing exterior lies a wickedness bestowed by Saint Nick himself. All good-looking men have been tapped on the shoulder by evil." I assumed it was just the ravings of a mad old woman. But looking at Wren now, standing in the rain like he's out for a stroll on a balmy summer's day, I'm beginning to think she might have been right. "What the fuck are you doing?" I rip myself free of his grasp. "You think this is some sort of game? People die from exposure in this kind of weather." He laughs, a soft huff of amusement down his nose, like I've just said something fucking funny. "Prone to hyperbole, Stillwater. You've been outside for 5 whole minutes. I doubt you'll catch hypothermia from a bit of wind and rain, unless you have a weak constitution." Weak constitution. I'll give him a weak fucking constitution. I'm gonna tear him a new one. Wren's dark eyebrow arches, the right corner of his mouth lifting up as he makes a show of slowly offering his hand out to me, palm up. "I know the way," he says darkly. I glare at his extended hand like it's covered in a deadly bacterium. "To where?" "To warmth. Shelter. Unless you'd rather spend another 30 minutes out here, spinning your wheels in the mud before you figure this thing out. Up to you. Women's prerogative and all that. It's all the same to me." He tips his head to one side, both eyebrows rising now, and my Judas of a heart stumbles over itself. Damn, I want to punch him in his smug fucking throat more than I've wanted anything in my entire life. "I don't need your hand. I can follow you just fine," I snap. Another burst of thunder crashes, deafeningly loud, right over our heads. Wren's thrown into stark relief, shadows stretched out across his face, bleached black and white by the staggering display of lightning that chases on its heels. The moment is so surreal that I'm struck by the absurdity of my situation. Wren drops his hand. "Keep your eyes open, then. You'll need to actually look where you're going," he shouts to make himself heard over the din. I watch the muscles in the column of his throat work, wondering if he'll chase after me if I run from him. No, he won't run. I'll run, and I'll stagger, and I'll trip, and I'll stumble. And Wren will calmly walk after me, untouched by the elements. He'll capture me, and he'll expend zero energy doing it, because that's just who he fucking is. He turns around, his black shirt clinging to his back like a second skin, and he walks off, turning left into the maze. I'm left with no choice but to follow. In 5 sharp turns through entrances I don't even see until the very last second, Wren has us at the maze's center. Amongst a riot of rose bushes, whose late blooms have been smashed and obliterated by the driving rain, their peach-red petals strewn all over the ground, a squat gazebo stands on a raised platform beneath the massive boughs of one of the giant live oaks that stands guard over the maze. I can't see the structure from my bedroom window. From that vantage point, all I can see are the high hedge walls and not much else. Here it stands, though, a small, solid structure crafted out of wood and glass, small and utterly charming, painted white and blue. Inside, a warm orange glow promises light and protection from the cold. Wren climbs the steps that lead up to the enclosed gazebo's entrance, pausing in front of the door, his pale hand resting on the weathered brass knob. "This place is off limits," he says. "We're not supposed to be out here." "No shit," I gesture up at the sky. We aren't supposed to be outside in general. He laughs that laugh again, breathy and entertained, as though everything about me is quaint and silly to him. I assume you're okay with breaking a few rules, Stillwater. If you'd rather toe the line, I can take you back to the academy. I just need a moment to grab my things. He can't hear me, growling under my breath. I trust that he can read the annoyance from the scowl on my face, though. Open the door, Jacoby. I'm turning blue, for fuck's sake. He seems pleased. It's hard to tell with him, though. He could also look like he wants to murder me. I can't really make up my mind. Twisting the knob, he shoves the door open, standing back and sweeping his arm in front of him, gesturing for me to go inside. I eye him suspiciously as I sidle past him into the gazebo. Grateful that I'm no longer being lashed at by rain, I lean against the wall, sighing with relief. The interior of the gazebo is surprising, to say the least. I was expecting a couple of peeling wooden benches and some empty soda cans rolling around on the bare concrete. But I'm dead wrong. The decor, because the place actually has a decor, is stunning. Polished parquet flooring around the edges of the room gives way to a plush, thick cream carpet. A sofa and two overstuffed armchairs have been arranged in front of an unlit open fireplace on the far side of the room. Around the curved wall opposite the door, a low three-shelved bookcase bows under the weight of countless thick, heavy tomes with leather spines and gilded edges. Potted plants sit on every flat surface, vines and ferns and rubber figs, all jostling for space and light at the windows, which are patinaed with grime on the outside, but clean from within. What is this? I whisper. This isn't just some forgotten place. This is someone's hideaway, a secret, well-loved sanctuary. Ren kicks off his muddy boots, discarding them by the door. He isn't wearing any socks, which makes me shiver for no good reason. The sight of his bare feet as he pads across the thick rug toward the fireplace makes me so unexpectedly uncomfortable that I don't even have the decency to look away. He bends at the waist, grabbing a piece of chopped wood from a wicker basket next to the fire, and he looks down at it, turning it over in his hands. It's supposed to be for the faculty. We commandeered it when we first came here, though. Fitz is the only one who knows we come here, and he turns a blind eye. Nothing about this place feels like it belongs to Ren. It's too grown up and simple and too, I don't even know how to explain it. I've never considered what Ren's personal space might look like, not even for a second. Knowing he has a bedroom somewhere is very different to being able to imagine what it would look like. It'd make more sense if he crawled out of a coffin in the ground at night, or if he materialized out of a cloud of black smoke. He tosses the piece of wood into the grate in the fire, his mouth twitching. He wants to don that ruinous smirk of his, I know he does. For reasons known only to him, he decides to restrain it this time. No need to look so uncomfortable, Stillwater. Take off the jacket. There's a blanket on the back of the couch. You can wrap yourself in that while it dries. I remain motionless, hugging the wall. Why am I here, Ren? I ask in a cold voice. He grabs more wood, crouching down to arrange the pieces to his satisfaction before he tears pages off an old newspaper at his feet, balling up the sheets and poking them into the gaps at the base of his unlit pyre. He doesn't say a word. Ren, I'm serious. The message. What was the point in sending it? Why the fuck am I here? When I was a kid, my father used to send me messages in Morse code. He used to drum his fingers against the table at breakfast, tap his pen on, well, anything. It was our secret thing. My stepmother used to hate it. Thanks for the heartwarming story. Now answer the question. It has to be 3 in the morning by now. I may be young, but I still require a lot of sleep. I like sleep, and Ren's depriving me of my rest for no apparent reason. He looks back at me over his shoulder, his lips parted, a strange look in his eyes. The brief moment of eye contact we share makes me want to hide behind the fucking bookcase. Turning away, he strikes a long match and holds the flickering flame against the paper until each one of the scrunched up balls is alight.
Your father taught you Morse code too, right?
Yes. I don't want to relinquish this or any other piece of information about myself, but it's a simple enough question. I have no reason to withhold the truth.
It wasn't a game for him, was it? It was a punishment.
A shockwave of panic detonates in my chest. It ripples out, sending adrenaline chasing through my veins, spreading through me like that lightning that fired across the sky before. He can't know anything about my father. He can't know shit about my past or about me. Anything he thinks he knows is wrong. So why do I feel like he's just cracked me open and rifled through all my ugly secrets? It makes me feel suddenly dirty. My father's irrelevant, I say tightly.
Our fathers shape us, Ren says, standing up to his full height.
Behind him, the fire he built roars to life, like the infernos of hell just leapt at his command and obeyed his summons.
I've read a lot about your old man. What else did he teach you? Muay Thai?
No.
Oh, right. Israel. He probably taught you Krav Maga.
I do not like that he's able to deduce so much about me. It's unfair that he's armed with information that I don't know about him in kind. There are things that he can't know. Things that have been buried so well and so deep that even he couldn't have dug them up. I don't see how any of this is important, I say. He pouts.
Do you still practice? I know a little Krav Maga myself. We could spar.
No.
No, you don't practice anymore, or no, you don't want to spar with me.
No, I don't practice here. Why would I when I don't have to? And can we stop talking about my father, please? That stuff's private.
Ren shrugs off my cold tone. Your wish is my command.
Quiet and leonine as a panther, he crosses the small room, coming to a stop in front of me. Flicks of his hair hang down into his face, creating a dripping curtain that shields his eyes. I still feel the intensity of them, though, burning into my skin. He licks his lips, his hand reaching up, making me flinch. He pauses, an inch away from my face. He has pianist's hands, with long, dexterous fingers. I'm riveted by the sight of them, by the thought of what he might do with them if left unchecked. His nails are still covered in that same chipped black nail polish I noticed on my first night at Wolf Hall.
You're a flighty little thing, he rumbles.
I resent the way his voice makes my skin break out in goosebumps. Forgive me for being cautious, but I don't know anything about you. We're not friends, I volley back at him. I'm not accustomed to people thinking they can touch me uninvited. He drops his hand back to his side, a slow smile spreading across his damnable face.
I'll be sure to wait until I'm invited then. You have a rose petal in your hair. I was just gonna get it out for you.
I automatically check my hair, finding the petal and disentangling it. Ren sucks his bottom lip into his mouth, his eyes full of an emotion I can't rightly decipher. It's a dangerous look, sharp, the type of look that could cut if administered correctly. Retreating a couple of steps, he shrugs, grabbing hold of the hem of his black long-sleeved shirt.
If you want to stand there in your soaking wet clothes, that's your call, Stillwater. I'm not one to suffer discomfort willingly, though.
Before I know what he's doing, he's pulled the sodden material of his shirt over his head and turned around, walking back to the fire, where he hangs the item of clothing from the rough-cut mantelpiece for it to dry. I'm left staring at his back, a naked expanse of muscle and flawless skin that makes my throat pulse and throb. That shirt. The same shirt he's been wearing day in and day out since that very first night when I met him outside Wolf Hall has been hiding a multitude of sins. Strong arms, a broad, strong back, and a chest that would make Michelangelo weep. His body's nothing short of divine. He faces me and just stands there, letting me shamelessly take him in. I should have some self-respect and look away. I can't, though. I've never seen anything like him before, carved and sculpted, magnificent in his perfection. I refrain from counting his abs. It's enough that they're there, and they're defined. From the crown of his head to the low-slung waistband of his jeans, Ren is the stuff of sweet heavenly dreams and twisted, terrifying nightmares. His eyes burn, feverish and fierce, as he uses them to pierce me to the core and gut me with a practiced ease. How many girls has he brought here and pulled this shit on? How many students at Wolf Hall has he dragged out here in the middle of the night and stupefied by stripping down to his bare and glorious skin? His list of casualties must be too long to comprehend. I thought you weren't supposed to take off the shirt, I mutter, finally looking away.
Oh, I could have taken it off all I wanted, he muses. I just wasn't allowed to wear anything else. It's past midnight now, though. February 1st. I'm released from my punishment.
You'll be wearing bright red tomorrow, then? He laughs quietly.
I'm not a very colorful person. Black suits my demeanor best.
Ha, yeah, I can see that. Black like your heart? Like your soul?
Ouch. He slaps a hand to his chest. I'm hit. Let the record show I'm officially hurt.
He sinks down onto the couch, kicking out his long legs in front of him. With the light from the fire casting a warm glow across the solid expanse of his stomach and his chest, as well as across his face, he cuts a frustratingly handsome figure.
I can find something to put on, he says, if I'm making you uncomfortable.
This is all so pointless and irresponsible that I'm furious at myself all of a sudden. He's playing me, and I'm letting him, allowing him to manipulate me and pull at my strings. He knows what he looks like. He also knows how his looks must affect members of the opposite sex. By clinging to the wall and choking on all my words, I'm feeding his need for attention. You know what makes me uncomfortable? I snap, stalking across the room. Coming back to my room to find a Bowie knife sticking out of my mattress and my belongings in pieces. That makes me really fucking uncomfortable indeed. From the couch, Ren looks up at me with a subtle, convincing frown, pinching his brows together.
Bowie knife?
Don't give me that shit, Jacoby. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You trashed my room and slashed up my mattress. If you were trying to put the fear of God in me, then it didn't work, okay? So just stay away from my room. The frown deepens.
Your room was trashed.
He's deadpan, the words flat, devoid of emotion. He repeats the words as a statement, not a question.
I didn't have anything to do with that. Not my style. Breaking and entering is pretty pedestrian.
Cut the shit. I know it was you. Who else would bother?
He smirks. Why would I bother?
You were looking for something in there, and you wanted to scare me. I proceed with my accusation, trying not to second-guess myself now that I'm looking into his clear green eyes and I can find no hint of a lie within them. He's an excellent actor, I'll give him that.
The best butchers don't scare the animals before they take them to the slaughter, Elodie. The fear taints the meat.
What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
Ren sighs, looking into the fire. Why would I try and scare you, little E? What would I have to gain from petrifying you half to death?
I've asked myself this already. There are plenty of reasons why he'd want to intimidate me, and I've considered them all. Now that he's posed the question, all of the reasons I came up with seem ridiculous. He doesn't need to frighten women into his bed. They probably fall over themselves in their rush to go there willingly. There is no good explanation why Ren would have messed up my room.
Don't fret, little E. Again, I assure you, I didn't enter your room without your permission, he says, toying with the seam on the back of one of the couch cushions.
Do I believe him? Hell no. It's pointless going back and forth with him, though.
Whatever. It'd be great if you finally spit it out and tell me what I'm doing here. I'd love to get back to bed and...
I'll answer your question, but not until you come and sit down, he interrupts.
With you standing over me in that giant fucking coat, this is starting to feel like an interrogation.
I want to go.
The weather hasn't improved in the last 5 minutes, though. The chances of me finding my way back out of the maze are slim at this point. It won't do me any good to get lost out there again, and I don't think Ren's going to help me back to Wolf Hall unless I humor him. Swift jab to the throat, knee to the balls, elbow to the solar plexus. I have a few self-defense maneuvers already prepped and ready to go in my head as I skirt around the small coffee table and reluctantly sit myself down in the armchair. At least here I'm close to the fire. The warmth radiating from the flames feels amazing. Satisfied, Ren runs a hand back through his hair, sweeping the wet curls out of his face.
I wanted you to come here because you're smart, he says. You're observant, which means you'll have noticed me noticing you. You must know that I'm interested in you.
I narrow my eyes. Why do I get the feeling that being the subject of your interest is bad for a girl's health? The boy with the black hair and the vivid eyes looks bemused.
Maybe I've been bad in the past. I'm sure Karina's told you plenty about that.
She's told me some, mostly about your failed plan to fuck half of Wolf Hall before Christmas. A bet, right? Between you and your Riot House buddies? Or are you going to tell me that she made that up?
Ren's hand stills, a tassel from one of the cushions trapped between his long fingers. He looks at me.
Into me?
Unmoving and unblinking.
There was a bet, he confirms. I was supposed to sleep with 10 girls between Halloween and Christmas, and I didn't. That's how I got stuck wearing the same shit for a month.
Huh. I'm surprised he actually admitted it. What happened? I ask. The girls start talking and comparing notes? You failed at the last hurdle after putting 9 extra notches on your belt?
The comment sounded cool and indifferent inside my head. Out of my mouth, it sounds sour and silly.
Let's not fuck around with any of that.
Ren leans forward, resting his forearms on his thighs. Petty quips will get us nowhere fast. Does it bother you that I haven't been saving myself for marriage or something?
Heat rises in my cheeks. Why would it bother me? Your sex life has nothing to do with me. It's none of my business.
And yet, from the judgmental tone in your voice, it sounds like it bothers you very much.
Really, I don't care. If the girls you sleep with are consenting, then...
I'm not a rapist, Elodie. I've never done anything without a girl's consent.
Usually, I only ever indulge a girl with my affections if she's on her knees begging for it.
Oh, and I'm sure you just love that, don't you? The begging must do wonders for your overinflated ego.
Begging leaves no room for misunderstanding. He rests his chin in the palm of his hand, propping up his head as he looks at me intently.
I don't like uncertainty. I like things to be very black and white, clear cut. What about you?
Yes, I like when things are clear cut, which is why I'll let you know here and now that I will never lower myself to my knees for you. You're a monster who loves to treat women like shit.
You don't know how I treat women. You don't know anything about me, remember?
This motherfucker, he has an answer for everything. Appearances would indicate that you chew women up and spit them out like they're a disposable commodity. I'm sure you were furious that you lost that bet, weren't you? It must have stung that you weren't able to convince 10 poor girls to dive into bed with you.
My heart's pounding in my chest, but Ren just sits there with his chin in his hand, the light from the fire still playing across the elegant, masculine frame of his body, completely impassive as he watches me rant. He seems pensive as he says,
"You've figured it all out, haven't you? You want to know the truth? The truth is that I didn't have to try and win that bet. The moment Pax told Damiana about it, it was all over the academy by the end of the day. And then I had girls tripping over themselves to fuck me. I could have tripled my quota 24 hours in. Not even I have that kind of stamina."
"Oh, wow, big man. So you won the bet after all. You just accepted the punishment for the sheer hell of it?"
"No, I didn't screw any of those girls. They wanted to throw their hats into the ring for the hell of it. To say they danced toe-to-toe with one of the Riot House boys. My dick doesn't get hard for that kind of shit. A girl's gotta earn me, not think she's doing me a favor."
"Whoa, careful. That ego's bordering on ridiculous now."
"It's not ego. It's just a fact."
"So, you're a good little boy after all? A saintly virgin? Is that what you brought me here to tell me?"
"Preposterous. If he legitimately tries to convince me that he has morals and has never slept with a student at Wolf Hall, then I'll know him for exactly who he is, a bold-faced liar."
Ren wiggles his toes in front of the fire, baring his teeth in a wolfish smile.
"I'm about the furthest thing you'll find from a virgin here," he says. "I was deflowered a long time ago."
That choice of word, deflower, is laughable. It implies that Ren was once innocent before he was plucked and sullied at someone else's hand.
Ren was never innocent. He came out of the womb corrupt and depraved. I'm certain of it.
"And no, I can already see it on your face. You know the truth. I'm the furthest thing from good you'll find here, too. Don't you want to know what I lost by not playing along with Dashiell and Pax's bet?"
"No, I don't really care. It's so predictable, this whole thing. Bored rich boys placing bets to stave off boredom, not caring how their stupid bullshit affects the people around them. Don't you care about anyone else here? Don't you feel bad about hurting people?"
Ren weighs his response quickly. He barely has to think about the answer at all.
"I care about Pax. I care about Dashiell. But not in a traditional way that most guys in high school care about each other. They're not my bros. They're not my homies. They're oxygen. Daylight, warmth, familiarity, shelter, home, safety. The other people wandering around the halls of this godforsaken shithole, do I care about them? No, Stillwater, I don't. I don't give a fuck about a single one of them, and I'm not afraid to admit it."
I'm cold, in spite of the fire. It's as though there's a block of ice sitting in the pit of my stomach, and it will not melt. I'm weary down to my bones. I should never have left my bedroom. I'm a fool for coming all the way down here in the blowing wind and rain to sit here and listen to this. He did trash my room. He's not ashamed of who he is in the slightest. Fool that I am, I guess that I was hoping I'd discover a few redeeming qualities that Ren's been hiding from the world. But there's nothing to redeem here. Ren's a barren wasteland, and I have no intention of wandering that wasteland, knowing I won't find anything to nourish me there. Urg. It's really gonna suck walking back out into that storm. I get to my feet, already shivering at the prospect of the driving icy rain slapping me in the face. I'm going back to my room. This is a waste of time.
For some reason, I care about you, though, he says, clenching his jaw.
He's not looking at me now. His eyes are fixed on the rug in front of the fire. From the expression on his face, I can see that this admission has cost him something. He doesn't like whatever it is he's feeling right now.
I'm cursed with this bewildering fascination over you, and it's really becoming inconvenient, Stillwater.
I roll my eyes, fighting back a dramatic sigh. What is this? What's the point? This is just another bet, isn't it? You're looking to redeem yourself after your last embarrassing failure, and you figured I'd make an interesting new target in one of your wagers. Well, I'm not your plaything, Ren Jacoby. I was not put on this earth for your amusement. I'll be cold and dead in the ground before I let you use my heart as a punching bag. So you can just forget it. Forget me.
Panic sizzles under my skin as Ren slowly gets up from the couch. His eyes are alive with electricity, that bottom lip of his trapped between his teeth again. My big speech hasn't had its desired effect by all accounts. He prowls forward, his muscles shifting beautifully under his skin, and I nearly trip over my own damn feet in my hurry to back away from him. He looks like he's going to fucking eat me.
My brain doesn't work like that, I'm afraid. I don't just forget. If I want something, I can't just move on and pretend like it doesn't exist.
I inch away from him, and my chest tightens when the backs of my legs hit the armchair I was sitting on a moment ago. I'm going to have to climb over the fucking furniture if I want to get away from him, which is not going to look graceful or dignified. I'll willingly do it, though, if it means I escape him.
Ren has other ideas. He takes one last step, so close to me now that I can feel his warm breath skating over my cheek, can see the flecks of amber and gold surrounding the black well of his dilated pupil. I can't move. I can't breathe. If I even blink, I suspect that he'll pounce and tear me apart. He takes hold of a lock of my damp, tangled hair, winding it thoughtfully around his fingers.
You're not a bet, Elodie. I've had to bargain with them for you. I've had to break my own rules in order to claim you, and it's cost me greatly.
Over the top of my paralyzing panic, a hot, furious anger begins to rise. Who the hell does he think he is? So fucking entitled. So fucking arrogant. You can't bargain over a person. I don't belong to any of you. I won't be haggled over like a piece of meat. My pulse is hammering at 30 different points all over my body, in my temples, in my ears, in the tips of my fingers, in my lips. Ren stares down at my mouth. He stopped breathing, wound tight, coiled like a hunter, ready to attack at any moment.
Jesus Christ, I've got to get out of here before...
Ren tugs on my hair, leaning in even closer, his eyelids half closed as he angles his head to one side, assessing my features. I rock back on my heels. A weightless, terrible moment passes where I register how unbalanced I am and realize I'm about to fall. Then I'm sitting down heavily in the chair behind me, the air huffing out of my lungs as Ren continues to press forward. He places one hand on the arm of the chair, the other against the back of it, right above my head. I'm trapped in a cage made by his body, and all I can smell is him. A dark, heady, beautiful scent that teases the back of my nose. It reminds me of night-blooming flowers, and cold winter walks with my mother, and the ocean, and my Uncle Remy's carpentry workshop. Holy shit. The next time I smell this scent, it won't remind me of any of those things. Powerful enough to overwrite my memories. The next time I smell this scent, it will remind me of this moment. Trapped in this chair. The way my heart rate is soaring, and I feel like I'm about to die a most delicious death. Get away from me, Ren, I whisper. He smiles sadly. Wish I could, Stillwater, but it ain't on the cards. I'm poised and ready to react. He's about to fucking kiss me. I'm not afraid of it. I'm shaking all over and I can't fucking think straight, but I am not afraid. Back up, Ren. His lips are parted, his pupils close to swallowing up his irises. My palms burn, my fingers itching. I don't trust myself to move right now. A part of me wants to slap the intense, doped, lust-filled look right off his stupidly handsome face. A part of me wants to fist a handful of his hair and pull him to me so that his full lips collide with mine. I want the kiss. I want him to suffer for this invasion of my personal space. I'm at war with myself, and I honestly don't know how I'm going to react if he makes a move. Your heart's racing, Stillwater, he whispers. I can see your pulse in the base of your throat. You want me. I want you to leave me alone. I want you to stay away from my room. Elodie. My voice is uneven and full of nerves. I know you're lying. Slowly, as if he's got all the time in the world, Ren shakes his head. A droplet of water falls from the riot of curls that are hanging down into his face, and it lands right on my mouth. I haven't lied to you. I never will. I'll give you all my dark, ugly truths, even though they'll frighten you, little E. I won't hold back. You. He dips his head, and I freeze beneath him. The air between us buzzes, brimming with a tension so sharp that it bites at my skin. Millimeter by millimeter, he leans closer and flicks out the tip of his tongue, licking the water droplet from my lips. I close my eyes, my lungs seizing. Fuck. 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 You are going to be mine, Elodie Stillwater. Of all my sins and misdeeds, making you fall in love with me will be the very worst of them all.
11. Ren. 4 days later. I walked her back to the house. Against my better judgment. Against every impulse roaring through my body, I walked her back to the house, and I didn't lay a finger on her. Thus far, the only part of my body that has been in contact with Elodie is my tongue, and that blissful moment when I dared to lick her delectable little mouth has sustained me through some highly frustrating, very long nights. She hasn't looked at me since. I've passed her in the hall. I've watched her in class. I've sat in the same room as her, buffeted by her tangible rage, and every second of it has been heaven. She hasn't left Karina's side. I know she's making sure that we aren't alone together, and this little game we're playing has driven me to the point of insanity. I could have pulled her into a closet by now. I could have